This is Free Talk Live. Talk radio that you can call in and bring up whatever is on your mind. But, of course, we bring things to the table, the proverbial table. There's not actually a table here.
Actually, it is a table, Daryl. Well, it's a desk.
It's a desk.
But it is shaped like a table. It's got a flat surface, and we put our tools and implements of destruction on it.
And the we being Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And last night, we were discussing the Brexit. And it's finally, after like 8-9 months, finally, Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, has notified the European Council that the United Kingdoms of England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland will be leaving the EU. And not everybody's happy about it.
See ya.
Scottish independence has now reached its highest level ever. The Scots, of course, having voted against seceding in 2015, I believe it was.
Yep.
And then when the Brexit vote came up, when you look at the polling results, the Scots voted overwhelmingly against Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
But now they might have their own second Brexit, if you will, to where they exit
I did Brexit. Read that the Brexit vote was like 51-point-something%. So there was a large
it was very
portion
close.
Of the yes. population that was against leaving the EU.
Very close. And report now from BBC, again, says support for Scottish independence has reached its highest level ever. But the Scottish Social Attitude Survey also suggested the popularity of the EU had fallen. The researchers said this suggests focusing on EU membership may not be the best way to swing more voters towards Scottish independence. The survey has asked the same question about how Scotland should be governed every year since 1999. It was carried out by ScotSyn Social Research and has been published 2 days after the First Minister Nicola Sturgeon confirmed she wanted to ask the UK government for permission to hold a second referendum on Scottish independence. Sturgeon says that the Brexit vote has left Scotland at a crossroads, with an independence referendum needed to allow the country to choose which path to take. But pro-UK opposition parties argue that another referendum will cause further division and uncertainty and is not wanted by the majority of people.
Wait, Scotland wants to leave UK now? Is that what
they tried that a couple of years ago and they were unsuccessful, and basically they're wanting to try again.
And do what? Like go back? Like they don't want to be back in the EU. They just don't want to be a part of the UK.
Well, that's
this is
thing.
Where it really gets confusing.
Right, because support for joining the EU, an independent Scotland joining the EU, support for that has fallen from where it had been previously.
Right.
Huh.
So, yeah, it's basically like it's not what was once a simple choice when they were deciding Scotland stay in
the UK.
The UK or leave. Now it becomes, okay, Scotland, stay in the UK or leave, and if we go, would we become part of the EU or not?
Right.
So it does, anybody who has emotions about any one of those different choices, then it gets all fuzzy.
And the unfortunate part is no matter what they end up doing, somebody's going to be unhappy.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's not necessarily unhappy or a bad thing. I hope that whichever way it falls, that the Scottish people are more free than they are today.
The survey comes as two polls look at the Scottish independence question. The Scottish Daily Mail's poll of 1,019 adults, which was carried between March 8th through the 13th, suggested that when don't knows are discounted, that is the people that are like, I don't know, or I'm undecided. When you subtract those people, Scottish voters would vote 53% to 47% to stay part of the UK. The Times Scotland poll of 1,028 adults, which was carried out March 9th through the 14th, suggested that when don't knows are discounted, Scottish voters would vote 57% to 43 to stay part of the UK.
So it seems like a consistently a majority of those people who care enough to, or they've made a decision one way or another, seem to support staying in the UK.
Correct. Okay. The Scotsend social research author Professor John Curtis said you should not compare his survey to the latest pollings commissioned by newspapers. He said the Scottish Social Attitude Survey is not part of a short-term opinion poll. This was a survey that was done with the whole of the last 6 months of last year and is not about trying to measure the short-term variation in the weather, which those two polls out recently do, but rather they look at the long-term change in the climate. A key suggestion in the Scotsend survey was that in the September 2014 referendum had left a legacy of dramatically increased support for independence, and it said the pro-independence movement looked certain to entertain a second referendum campaign in a much stronger position than it had enjoyed ahead of the first referendum. Asked to choose between independence, devolution, and not having any kind of Scottish Parliament at all, 46% of the 1,237 people surveyed between July and December of last year now back independence. This is a higher level of support for independence than any time since 1999 and double the level registered by Scotsend in 2012 when the latest independence referendum campaign initially got underway.
So if they're going to do it, it seems like a good time to throw it back out there on the ballot and see what happens this time. What was the result last time of the referendum?
I do not have the results of that referendum in front of me.
I'm just even trying.
It was fairly close. It was fairly close.
I thought it was like in the 50 coupled of high 40s.
Yeah, I think it was somewhere around 45, 47.
Yeah, to like percent. 53. We'll dig that number up so we actually have a real number. But
wait, what was the... which?
This is looking at the last referendum for Scottish independence.
The only referendum that they've ever had.
What year was that?
Well, it was actually September 2014.
Two
and a half years ago, roughly.
Yeah.
The Social Attitude Survey suggested the increase in support for independence in recent years has been most marked among younger people. As a result, there's now a very large age gap in support for independence, with 72% of the 16 to 24-year-olds wanting to leave the UK compared to just 26% of those over 65. Independence is now the most popular constitutional option, with 42% supporting devolution, while 8% of those surveyed do not want any kind of Scottish Parliament at all. And devolution is basically the British word for federalism. Mm-hmm. You know, more local control. They can't call it states' rights because Scotland's not a state. It's a country. But would wind up, you know, if this devolution thing did go through, would wind up giving the Scots a little bit more local control and less stuff being decided by the British Parliament.
Just in Parliament.
So I just pulled up that Scottish independence referendum. From September 18th, 2014, should Scotland be an independent country? Yes votes, 1,617,989, which was 44.70%.
So 44, almost 45% voted yes.
And no votes were 2,001,926, breaking down to 55.30%.
Yep.
Yeah.
So about 45 to 55%,
and the source of that is obviously Wikipedia.
And well, there again, we go. According to this survey, right now 46%. According to the Scotsend survey, 46% of Scots support the idea of independence. There's more on this, plus something weird about Irish independence, maybe. Your calls and thoughts, welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450 free. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And have you ever wanted to start your own blog or website, but you've not been able to put that idea into action? Well, you're in luck. HostGator, one of the top hosting companies out there, is offering a special deal to Free Talk Live listeners. Go to HostGator.com/FTL and you can get up to 50% off their regular prices. Hosting your own website or blog can be intimidating, but HostGator makes it easy. HostGator offers a simple one-click easy installation of WordPress. They have 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-per-week over-the-phone or live chat tech support, and a very intuitive and user-friendly control panel that puts the power of creation and the simplicity of use into the hands of you, the customer. HostGator has a 99.99% uptime rating, so you don't have to worry about outages. To get the special offer of up to 50% off for Free Talk Live listeners, visit HostGator.com/FTL. We're talking second Brexit, specifically the idea of Scotland leaving the Brexit, leaving the UK.
Is this Lord of the Rings? Are we talking hobbits? Brexit, not breakfast.
It's like a piece of a pie.
Yeah, I was saying second breakfast.
Nope, second Brexit.
Okay.
Second Brexit. Okay. But yes, I did take
yeah,
the...
Yeah, you might need to turn up my headphones just to
hear that.
Well,
you just told me to turn them down.
I know. We're getting used to them. I'm using new headphones.
So now you're reminding me of that guy from the Chappelle show that was deaf in the one ear that made the hit. Turn my headphones up. I can't hear you. Turn my headphones up. So hopefully you're able to hear me now, Chris.
Can I hear you now?
So yes, second Brexit, Scotland leaving the UK, possibly. New polls suggest that there's more support now than ever before. And again, the referendum that happened in September 2014, just under 45% of Scots voted to secede from the UK. New polls are showing between 43 to 47% support, and there have been three different surveys done, two of them over short periods of time, March 8th through the 13th and March 9th through the 14th. The other survey that was a little bit more in-depth polled people between July and December to try the quote from the professor of Scots and Social Research. Says the short polls are trying to determine a variation in the weather. The longer poll that his company conducted was to look at the overall climate.
Right.
And I'm curious to know, like, now that the UK stepped out of the EU, is, like, the Scottish people, are they more kind of happy about that? Is that like maybe one of the reasons they wanted to withdraw from the UK originally was because a lot of the things that they were bound by the EU for?
Well,
but now that they're...
The Scots were actually, my understanding, the referendum back in 2014, the Scots were going to secede from the UK and then seek membership as an independent nation into the EU.
Oh, really?
Yes. But...
But that may have been part of why it failed, huh?
Well,
you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Out of the frying pan and into another fire?
Well, the Scotsin survey also asked about the EU. Although Scotland voted to remain in the EU during the Brexit, they voted 62% to 38% of Scots voted to remain in the EU.
However,
the survey suggested skepticism about the institution is now at the highest level ever. 2 in 3 Scots either want Britain to leave the EU or for the EU's powers to be reduced.
Oh, good.
In 2014,
kind of reminds me of like a high school scenario where you just have like everybody switching friends. You know, like one day you're going to sit at this lunch table, then you're going to sit at this lunch table. Now you're like, okay, well, you know, this person decided to go over there, so maybe I'll go sit over here.
I always sat at the same lunch table, and if I walked into the cafeteria that I've not been in 21 and a half years, I could probably still
find your same seat.
Find the same seat. In 2014, the figure again for support for the EU in Scotland, The figure stood at just over 53% of Scots that either wanted Britain to leave the EU or for the EU's powers to be reduced.
So that number's going up, and I think it's indicative of probably a lot of countries in Europe that are really starting to feel the effects of this overreaching super government that sits above their own government, and in many ways it degrades their sovereignty.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
and that's
decisions
really
we used to make locally, yep. You know, now it's up to some panel in within the EU, and it's crazy.
That's the whole like fueling factor behind really any secession movement is control and restriction, you know, because even like if you look at it on such a small scale, right, of like parenting, even children, when you try to control them, they tend to resist that control. You know what I mean? So it's not surprising that you have all of these big governments like the EU and even the UK in its own restrictive ways that are like kind of pushing people to want to withdraw from all the control and regulation.
Well, that's where I think government may be the exception to the rule.
What do you mean?
I think if governments see advantages in being subservient to another government, they're kind of all for it. More to the point, if becoming part of the EU would grant the government of the UK, let's say, more power over its citizens or the ability to tax at higher rates, and then there's always the sort of, hey, don't blame us, it's the EU doing this
right
stuff,
they but get we're to still pass doing the buck.
Yeah, you pass the buck up the chain and you could probably get away with more. So
well, what I do like though is how like this whole Brexit thing happened like peacefully, you know. It was kind of like, well, hey, we don't want to play your game anymore, we're gonna go away.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like the EU was like, no, you can't do that, you
no,
know,
no war was fought.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I do
that's
like
a plus.
That
that's a plus.
Kind of, you know, a good sign.
The skepticism in Scotland is even common among those who voted last year to remain in the EU. The report concluded a majority, 56% of all Remain voters, believed the EU should have fewer powers. Those who currently back Scottish independence are also divided in their views about Brexit, with a third voting to leave the EU in last year's referendum. Their support could be at risk if Scottish independence is linked firmly to EU membership. Professor Curtis said the pro-independence campaign has never been stronger electorally in Scotland. And again, the current support in Scotland for Scottish independence is solidly double what it was just a few years ago when the referendum attempts, or you know, the planning for a
right.
Scottish referendum
right.
actually wound up got going. So good chance, according to these polling numbers, you know, unless something drastic changes between now and whenever they vote, does look like very good chance, if they have another vote sometime soon, that the Scots might wind up being independent
yep.
again.
And I like those young numbers. The younger voters are very yep. much in favor of independence. Good
and
for them.
Then you're going to hear some story about this little Scottish town that's withdrawing from the Scots.
Good.
Yes.
Secede from all the things. This is Free Talk Live from Scotland to Ireland. That's where we're going. And your calls and thoughts welcome. 855-450-FREE.
Bitcoin.com is of the opinion that the current Bitcoin Core development team is not taking satisfactory steps to ensure the growth and advancement of Bitcoin in accordance with Satoshi's vision. As community efforts to resolve these problems have failed, it is necessary to resolve them with a different approach. By using subreddit r/BTC instead of r/Bitcoin and running Bitcoin Unlimited, you are casting a vote against the current development team. Learn more at Bitcoin.com. That's Bitcoin.com.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we started off with an article that I believe we teased last night about the support for Scottish independence being higher than ever before. And it's not really known whether any of this support or how much of this support is tied to Brexit. The polling numbers, and again, there were a lot of them, seem to be kind of, you know, up in the air about whether or not support for Scottish independence was tied to the Brexit.
Right.
And support among Scots for remaining in the EU has actually declined from even 1 year, actually less than 1 year ago. But apparently the Brexit from the EU has led to, are we calling this Irexit?
No, it's not really Irexit. It's more or less like the preliminary stages to what could be Irexit.
Right. Right. It's getting talked about.
Yeah, it's getting talked about. It's basically titled Ireland Voices Anger Over EU Rivals Wooing Finance Firms from London.
Can we call it Ireleave? Because that makes more sense than Irexit. Just trying to like slap exit to the end of everything.
I like Ireleave.
Come on. It's easy.
It's like, you know, Cal-leave-fornia makes more sense than Cal-exit.
I like Cal-exit. I can't help it. I'm in love with that that suffix.
And I had to bring in this story anyway because with a last name like Mullins, you guys know I'm Irish, so... St. Patrick's
I
Day
did tomorrow. Not know that Mullins was an Irish surname.
My ancestors were actually on the Mayflower.
I did not realize there were
like part Irish.
Many Irish that came over on the Mayflower.
I didn't either.
I'm Irish enough to have a little bit of freckles here on my cheekbones.
And yeah. Okay. We're just going to take your word for it at this point.
My 23andMe did not break down the difference between British and Irish. It just lumped that all together.
Gotcha.
We didn't you do that like genetic thing though? Like,
yeah.
The 23andMe, that's the 23andMe. Genetic test. Okay. So it just has British and Irish as one category, and then it's got like Western European and Eastern European. I am 4% Neanderthal.
I think my great great grandmother was Cherokee, so it's up there. Anyway, so this article, like I said, it comes from The Guardian, and it's titled Ireland Voices Anger Over EU Rivals Wooing Finance Firms from London.
So this is not necessarily in response, not directly in response to the Brexit. It's sort of a response to a response.
Well, the subtitle says Dublin makes complaint about other European cities using undercutting to attract businesses looking to relocate after Brexit.
Let's just jump into the article.
Okay. Yeah. So Ireland has complained to the European Commission that it is being undercut by rival centers competing to host financial firms looking for a base in the European Union outside London after Brexit. Last week, the U.S. insurer AIG became the biggest company so far to pick Luxembourg as its EU base, alarming Irish officials who fear that others may follow.
Well, that doesn't really sound that surprising because based on the numbers that I've seen, I believe Luxembourg is a much more friendly economy and friendly atmosphere to businesses than Ireland.
And I think what we're seeing is lots of businesses, international businesses that wanted to do business in the EU, which is, you know, it's cartel of governments.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to do that, you wanted to be inside of an EU city with the UK leaving the EU, it would make sense for them to want to relocate.
Exactly.
So that's one of those risks that mm-hmm. you take by leaving an organization. Okay, there's going to be some fallout. I might lose some jobs, might lose some business. That's what we're seeing.
Yeah, so while the final terms for doing business with the EU from Britain are uncertain, finance executives say privately they expect Brexit to isolate London and want to establish bases inside the bloc from where they can access its single market.
Okay, this just drives me nuts. There's this thing called the internet that they came up with a few years back that really doesn't matter where you are. Mm-hmm. You know, you can kind of do whatever you need anywhere.
Hold on. I'm going
you know
to play AIG advocate here for a second.
Wow. Can I get say that one more time slowly so we can capture that as a soundbite for later?
Oh, you can find it in the archives, all of the archives for free at freetalklive.com. But there are times where it does...
Yes.
Make a difference where you're located because of various tax
taxes,
structures.
Certainly.
And regulations.
Certainly.
So, you know, yes, I understand the whole...
You can conduct business.
The internet exists, so you can conduct business from anywhere.
Right.
But for various tax reasons, it does make sense to locate in certain places.
Yeah, so they rent a mailboxes or us in Luxembourg. Everything's good. They can keep their existing building. I'm just kidding. Because it's not that simple. You're right, Daryl.
Mm-hmm. So the four main alternative locations are Frankfurt, Paris, Dublin, and Luxembourg. AIG said its move was driven by Luxembourg's proximity to its European clients and its role as a founder of the EU. Eugen, I think that's his name, Murphy, the minister in charge of promoting Dublin's financial center, described tactics by rival locations as dangerous competition. He told Reuters other cities in Europe are being very aggressive in trying to win business. We have always said we would not be predatory, that we are not interested in brass plating, he said, referring to the practice of setting up a token operation with a brass plate sign outside in order to gain market access. Although the EU wants to show a united front in negotiations with Britain, the dispute is testing this unity. Murphy said he had raised concerns with Valdis Dombrovskis, one of the commission's most senior officials, about creeping regulatory arbitrage, a reference to undercutting rivals by offering lax regulation. Although banks face strict supervision under the European Central Bank and the Eurozone, there is no similarly powerful regulator for insurers and other financial companies.
So one thing that I want to correct something that I said, where I said I thought that Luxembourg rated higher than Ireland in the most recent economic freedom map. I was completely wrong.
Really? Way
Luxembourg is ranked 23rd. Ireland is ranked number 5.
Yeah. And so basically, like the article said, where Ireland's upset because it's saying that it's undercutting rivals by offering lax regulations. So basically, the European Union, which is a form of government,
sure,
is offering AIG lax regulations, more lenient regulations, if they go into Luxembourg.
Right.
Because Luxembourg apparently has bigger government than Ireland, and so little government supports big government in order to benefit.
And what's interesting here is the EU was supposed to be the one of the goals, or at least people anticipated it would be a goal, would be a leveling of the playing fields so that bank regulations wouldn't vary dramatically from country to country and things like that. Mm-hmm. But what they did talk about specifically was, well, yeah, we have lots of that, but we don't have it for insurers.
So... Mm-hmm. When has any government ever actually leveled the playing field? It seems to me that every government picks winners and losers.
Right. If who they want to win is lower than where they want them to be, they will level the playing field so that they can then crush and destroy the competitors the government doesn't support.
I remember about a decade ago, might have been a little more than a decade ago, in Birmingham, Alabama, where I was born and raised, the city decided that they were going to offer Walmart this sweetheart of a deal. We'll give you this piece of property. We'll give you all these tax breaks.
Right.
Because we want you to move 3 miles from where you currently are, just outside of the city of Birmingham, right, into the city of Birmingham. And you know what? That Walmart closed down about 2 years ago. It's not even a Walmart anymore.
You don't
just
hear that
totally
often.
You know, here's millions of dollars, and it's not even a Walmart anymore. They pick winners and losers. This is Free Talk Live. Yeah! This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE on this St. Patty Day Eve edition. And I don't know why Heather is infatuated with making sure that I make some St. Patty references.
I'm just making sure, you know, because I know there's a lot of libertarians that, you know, act like having fun is a crime. Okay,
exactly.
I'm bringing fun back to the LP. Okay.
No, that's fine. But one of the problems is, you know, we like to try to stay timely. Yeah. So when you make references to the day,
it's tomorrow, Daryl. It's right around the corner. This is like Christmas Eve.
He even made fun of my sneakers because they have little St. Patty's Day shamrocks on them.
Oh, I didn't make fun.
Boston Red Sox. He didn't make fun of them.
I didn't make fun.
I show him and he goes, "Wow,
wow,
wow."
I'm
surprised that somebody would. I'm surprised that somebody would make shoes with shamrocks all over them.
They make shakes with shamrocks in them. Why should you be surprised
by
shoes? They're
not shamrocks inside the shake. It's a vanilla shake with green food coloring.
Come on. They use real shamrocks in that.
855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're discussing the Irish anger over the Luxembourg draft of AIG. Like, Luxembourg apparently is recruiting AIG heavily to locate to Luxembourg instead of Ireland.
I think it's poaching.
And the Irish
are very
happy.
Upset. I mean,
they're not happy.
And again, the reason that AIG is even looking to relocate from London is because they want to remain inside the EU for various tax purposes, I guess, and possibly also because regulations appear to be a little bit more favorable in Luxembourg.
So the commission declined to comment on the complaint by the Irish, but an official said it will monitor any developments in this area closely. With final decisions on moves out of London still months away, the rivalry has become increasingly hostile, with some lobbyists for Frankfurt even said to be privately criticizing the Irish accent.
What? Oh, my God.
Nevertheless, Dublin has received 80 inquiries from banks to fund managers, according to IDA Ireland, the state agency that attracts foreign investment, while Ireland's central bank has received 5 applications from insurers to set up shop.
Okay, so 5 insurance companies are going to move to Ireland. One apparently is moving to Luxembourg.
One big one.
Yeah,
Goliath.
It's a big one, but the Irish basically, they want all of the gold in their basket.
Yeah, but you know what that means is that AIG is in like bed with the EU, basically. So they're going to dominate any insurance market anyway.
Well, the EU is it's a huge market. So I get that part. But the point is no different than If Daryl and I both decide that we're going to open up gas stations here in Keene, New Hampshire, we're both going to do our best to make our gas station as attractive and as compelling to attract customers too. So whether it's in lower prices or better service or all these different ways in the free market, that's how we decide things.
Right.
Now, shouldn't be any different for governments.
Yeah.
If you want the business, make it more appealing.
What this kind of reminds me of, though, is kind of like, okay, if you look at EU as the government, right? Like, and AIG, having worked in the insurance industry myself, I worked for Bankers Life.
Right.
It's kind of the same thing happening as like what happened with Fidelity, right? Like Fidelity had that big crisis where they mismanaged and misspent like millions and millions of dollars, right? But because they're friends with the government, they don't get punished the same way the little guys that are setting up shop in Ireland would get if they didn't follow the same rules and regulations.
Right. And I'm going to point out a flaw with my analogy of saying governments interacting are sort of like Daryl and I open up rival gas stations. The difference is that governments can sweeten the deal beyond the means of economics.
Well,
they can,
and also,
and you can count on Daryl's gas station and not celebrate holidays.
Exactly.
Throw that out.
No St. Patrick's Day special for you.
The governments can also force you to purchase their gas,
sure,
whether you need to or not. Whereas if you and I set up competing gas stations,
right,
we could not force people to be our customers. We'll get back into this story. Go to the phones. We've got Bo calling in from Virginia. Bo, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, you're
hey,
on. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
How are y'all doing tonight?
Good.
We're doing a radio show. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Well, my thoughts on this are corporations do not need to be in control of our country. And it's a very sad time that we're living in today.
Okay. In what way do you feel they're in control of our country? Or how do they exercise control over our country? And I'm not disagreeing with you.
How are they not? I mean, they have every politician in their bank book, you know. It's disgusting.
I do recall reading a Princeton University study that had said that based on American politics, they did all these different studies that America had an oligarchy, not a democracy.
Sure.
Which was kind
of... Yeah, it's interesting. So one of my favorite examples is the 17th Amendment.
Also, were we not meant to be a constitutional republic, not necessarily a democracy where 51% controls the other 49%?
Well, with constitutional republic, and I'm sure this is something where me and Chris will disagree slightly, it just means that there's a written constitution and an even smaller percentage of people get to dictate and control what everybody does.
Oh, yeah.
And if you look at the World Freedom Index that came out, I think the last one that included personal rights, not just economic, five of the top 10 countries not only are not republics, they don't have written constitutions. I'll tell you a country that is a republic that does have a written constitution that ranked at the very bottom of the list, North Korea. Another country that is a republic that has a written constitution that also ranks near the bottom, China. Mm-hmm. Another country with a written constitution that is a republic, Cuba. So the words republic and constitution don't mean what most people think they mean.
It's an ideal.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep. And I think I don't know how you go about reversing this. I don't know if replacing one system of government with another system of government, but through most of my life, what my belief has been that if we could only return to some of the principles that are outlined in the Constitution, it would be better.
We need to return to a gold standard, is what I think.
Well, no argument there for me.
As long as there's no fractional reserve banking, which has traditionally existed as long as there's been governments that are involved in currency. Bo, thank you for the call. Let's get back into this Ireland article. And Ireland, another country that is a republic that has a written constitution.
Well, while Murphy did not name Luxembourg, Irish officials said it was the location that had triggered the concerns. We are hearing from various sources that companies are being offered certain incentives, said Murphy.
Murphy being the minister in charge of promoting Dublin's financial center.
Mm-hmm. We are hearing from various sources that companies are being offered certain incentives, said Murphy. They are offering a back door to the single market without the requirement to have capital to back up their entities in the EU. Ireland's central bank, wary of the risks in finance after the country was almost bankrupted by a financial crash, is making higher demands, officials and consultants said. Luxembourg does not appear to be requiring companies to set up substantial offices in order to establish an insurer, said one senior insurance executive. This was disputed by Luxembourg's finance ministry, which said it strongly committed to the highest standards in the supervision of the financial sector. A hard Brexit, in which Britain loses access to the EU's single market, would wipe more than 4% off Irish exports, compared with 2.5% for Germany and 0.6% for Luxembourg, an Irish government commissioned report showed. And such a hit for Ireland's export-focused economy could cost about 40,000 jobs.
Now, one thing that was mentioned here about, you know, Luxembourg being a much favorable market to set up shop, it doesn't surprise me at all that AIG or any insurance company would go there as opposed to Ireland.
Yeah, and Ireland was not a shining star during the financial debacle. of 2008, 2009.
Your calls and thoughts. Welcome. Hour 2 coming up next. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450.
The Libertarian Party of New Hampshire is having its 2017 annual convention March 18th from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Holiday Inn in Concord, New Hampshire. The convention will feature speakers Caleb Dyer, a freshman state representative who recently joined the Libertarian Party, and Patrick McKnight, regional representative to the Libertarian National Committee. Tickets for the convention are $10 for non-members and admission is free for LPNH members. Go to lpnh.org/convention for more information. That's lpnh.org/convention.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733 in studio. It's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we spent the first hour talking about Brexit and second Brexit and possibly third Brexit, although technically that would be what 11th is in the Lord of the Rings realm there. The 11th is, of course, being Ireland being upset that AIG is looking to relocate to Luxembourg from London instead of relocating to Dublin. You can call about any of those things or whatever is on your mind or what we're about to talk about, which is
beer.
Can I
say one last thing, though, about the other thing?
Of course.
Please.
Just because I think like the point, the reason that I had brought that article into use, because I think the good point behind it is Ireland's concerns that the EU was picking and choosing the winners in the marketplace. Do you know what I mean? By offering lax regulation and stuff like
well,
that.
Well, it's technically Luxembourg that has the lax regulations. Ireland is a member of the EU.
But even it is kind of going against the grain of what the EU was supposed to be, which was the way it was sold was very, very much a level playing field in all these areas like banking and things like that.
Yeah.
But they left this little carve out for insurance companies. So, you know, states like Luxembourg, countries like Luxembourg.
I'll have to keep an eye on that whole AIG
thing.
And, you know, maybe in the following weeks, I'll keep you guys updated.
So there's apparently some changes to beer laws.
They're kind of always changing, and I always kind of keep my eyes open for this. And Heather brought up the fact that she was bringing an Irish story, and I'm
like,
"Well,
beer."
And everybody knows what tomorrow is.
If I know anything about Ireland, I learned it from Family Guy that there are more drunks than people.
That's an interesting fact. I would challenge.
Wait, what?
It's a Family Guy joke where they went to Ireland and they said, little known fact about Ireland, there's more drunks than people. And it showed the airplane landing on the runway that was just covered in beer bottles.
I'm sure.
I love a good Family Guy reference.
That's all right. The Irish certainly do like their beer. And here in America, we pay absolutely no attention to the history of St. Patrick. And we wear green shirts, drink green beer, and pretty much half the population.
It's a made-up holiday. It's a completely made-up holiday.
But it's a fun one.
It's an excuse for people to drink horrible, horrible beer.
There goes Daryl being the
good
fun
beer.
Sucker.
There are some great Irish beers.
Hold on. I like good beer, and there have been some laws that have been changed in certain states over the last decade that allow people to wind up getting good beer a little easier.
See, in Daryl's world, you can drink beer. You just can't have fun.
No, you can have fun, just
you can't
don't
declare
celebrate
it a holiday.
Stupid
you can't
things.
Have a holiday, because that would be fun.
That's okay. Celebrating stupid things is part of life. I mean, that's one of the joys, is that, you know, and I do like St. Patrick's Day, because it's one of those days where...
God, you're like one of those libertarians that make you feel like you're ruining the world for watching football.
I watch
it's not
football.
Productive.
I watch football.
But football's fun, Daryl.
I know.
You can't watch football.
But football's not a made-up holiday. Football is
yes, it is. They have parades, too. There's a St. Patrick's Day parade, and there was a Patriots parade because we're awesome. and guess what? Football is also an excuse to drink beer. So
we're tying this all back together to my story.
There's the Parade of Roses that I will occasionally watch. But no, I'm a big football fan, and I actually, you know, go to bat against the libertarians that are like, you should only have fun by smoking weed and listening to crappy music. Because exactly. That's how I entertain myself. Well, yeah. No, I would rather entertain myself by watching pro wrestling and college football. Thank you very much.
Well, there you go. So we're going to talk about this. And we've talked about
beer
and how you can get beer in the United States and how it ties back to Prohibition. So during Prohibition, beer was outlawed. That was something you couldn't do. So a lot of beer manufacturers started making ginger beer, or they made root beer, or they made things that were completely unrelated to what they were doing.
Right. But and I think IBC is probably one of the few, if I remember correctly, they started doing the root beer and cream soda, and then they just stuck with it after Prohibition ended instead of going back to making the beers. We'll get into the beer story. We've got a couple of calls. We've got Sarah calling in from New Mexico. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live. What kind of beer do you like?
I do not drink any beer. I don't have any, taste for it.
You drink hard liquor, don't you?
I thought she was a teetotaler.
I had her down for wine.
Maybe. Do you drink at all, Sarah?
No, I'm a tea drinker. I'm a tea drinker of sugarless tea, jasmine tea, oolong tea.
But no alcohol.
No alcohol.
Gotcha.
But I just want to say that I'm into, you know what I like? I like red wine extract, like a powder.
See, I was right.
Yeah. There you go.
That's
okay. It's good for you.
They say it's good for you. Yes, but I just want to say that, you know, that here in New Mexico, we pulled out all the junk snack machines out of our schools.
Maybe why do the schools have snack machines anyway?
Well, you know what? Well, the sugar industry had pushed the candies, the sugary drinks, into all the schools. And that's when you went for a snack, that's all you got.
So your schools had candy vending machines in them?
Ooh, I'm going to beg to differ with you there, Sarah, because I was involved in student government way back in the 1930s when I was in school. Yes, I was.
Back in 1872 when the Prussian school system was coming to the United States. Chris was the class president.
My school was very small, and one of the things that if I'm remembering this right, but I think the student body voted to bring in a soda machine. In other words, the students wanted one.
Yeah, I
remember. We voted it, and we arranged for it to happen. So it wasn't that you know, Coca-Cola or Pepsi was, you know, knocking on the door of the principal's office going, hey, can we put a machine in here? It was the students saying, we'd like to have this. This would be a good thing.
I remember when I was in high school 20 plus years ago, everybody that ran for class president said, if elected, I'll put in a snack machine and a drink. But we didn't have those things.
Right, right.
We did, and I don't know how this happened, but I believe we did have a Gatorade machine in the field house.
Right.
So where the football team changed before and after football practice, before games, mm-hmm. etc. I believe we had a Gatorade machine in there, but it was completely separate and only the football players had access to it.
Yeah. So again, in at least in my small town experience, it was demand from the customers that brought that machine in. It wasn't necessarily, you know, soda salesman knocking on the door.
Well, you know what? I don't know exactly what snacks that we had, like, before we pulled it out. And it got replaced with nuts and granolas and fruits. I think that's what I was told. So I think the only thing that was left in there was a sugary candy or a sugary drink. Those are the only two options you had for children going to school. So it was like the health professional of the schools that have done that. And, you know, if they could do that, and it's a going trend across the nation, and the going trend is the sugar tax, we could do it. I really think that.
So, well, without even going to a sugar tax, people in general are trying to eat healthier. People recognize that high fructose corn syrup and things that are made with it are bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
We know that's not an that's not something government had to tell us. It's something that people on the internet kind of espouse, and a lot of people feel that way.
And apparently, according to the Albuquerque Journal, the vending machines with junk food were removed from schools in New Mexico in 2006. So thank you for the breaking news from a decade ago, Sarah. This is Free Talk Live. Your calls and thoughts welcome about whatever is on your mind. Hopefully it's truth.
And we'll get back to some beer.
We'll take calls about anything. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. How would you like to save 5% on things that you're going to buy online?
I would.
Now, unfortunately, you can't buy beer this way. But you can buy a bunch of other stuff using saveatpurse.com. And you can save up to 25, 30%. 33% is the cap that they, you know, that they got to put a cap somewhere. And you might be asking, like, how do I save this 5, 10, 20% or more? Again, go to saveatpurse.com. And what you'll do after you get the account, you'll put things in an Amazon wish list, and then you've got to set the settings of the wish list to certain things. And then you import that wish list into your account there at saveatpurse.com. And then you fund the account with Bitcoin. Someone buys the Bitcoin at a markup. You get the items at a discount. Amazon gets all of the money that Amazon gets, and everybody winds up happy. Right? Because you save money, the person gets Bitcoin, and it's a win-win-win. I've used this a bunch, close to 50 times over the last 2 years. I've saved close to $500, and I've not made, you know, huge purchases. I know other people that, you know, they've saved $100 on a single purchase because they're buying a very high-priced item. Again, saveatpurse.com. It's definitely worth it, even if you just save 5% on an instant buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's extra money in your pocket right there.
That's decent.
Saveatpurse.com.
And to be accurate, Daryl, there was a story that came out yesterday that Amazon is beginning to deliver through their Prime service in certain cities, delivering alcohol, wine, champagne, and beer.
I did not know that.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that story. Maybe we'll get to it on another evening. But
because
that,
I know I've looked at some of the what they call direct shippers.
Right.
To where you can order beer over the internet and you've got to pay a really ridiculously high delivery fee. You've got to pay them a fee to look at your ID before they drop it off. And it's not easy to do.
Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit after this story. But we kind of teased this last hour, and we were talking about how the system that we buy beer was kind of set up after Prohibition, after that debacle. And
right.
When you prohibit items, you make it illegal for people to purchase things that they want, then we get increases in crime because guess what? People are going to still buy it. They're still going to want it. And they are going to turn to people that are willing to sell it on the black market. Those
right.
People on the black market have no court system, no legal system to protect them. So often that turns to violence. And
right.
There's a million reasons why prohibition's bad, and prohibition was bad for alcohol, and today it's bad for drugs.
Right.
But and we're going to focus on a brighter spot.
Right. And you know, since you had mentioned the alcohol prohibition, there are still some places that wind up requiring, if you want to open, say, a microbrew or some sort of brew pub, they require that the building that you're using had been not only in existence prior to Prohibition, but also used as a brewery
right.
prior to prohibition. So it's just, it's a way to still basically enforce prohibition without calling it alcohol prohibition.
Right. And the other part of those type of laws is protectionism. So
it's all in the name of public safety.
Well, not always. Sometimes it's in the name of supporting those big brewers that donate lots to my campaign.
That's exactly
right. You know, and Pennsylvania is really notorious for that. Yingling has an amazing lobbying group.
There was a proposal in Alabama about a decade ago where they wanted to increase the ABV, that's the alcohol by volume, from the 6% limit to 13.9%. The guy that was in charge of Birmingham Budweiser made one public statement against this proposal. He got a telephone call the next morning from Budweiser Corporate saying, don't open your mouth about this ever again if you want to keep your job. We have, and they cited off a number. I forget how many beers it was. Fairly sizable number. They said, we've got all of these extra beers that can go on the market in your area as soon as this passes.
Yeah.
If you don't want it to pass, that's fine, but keep your mouth shut if you want to stay employed.
Right. It's craziness. And
so, you know, and I don't think anybody would say that Budweiser is not a large brewery. So, yeah. You know, like, there are times even when the big brewers support loosening the restrictions
regulations,
because they wind up benefiting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this patchwork system that we have all began with sort of what they call the three-tier system. So it looks sort of like this. You have the brewer who makes beer on one end. And you have the consumer who drinks beer, sometimes to excess, on the other end. And in the middle, this three-tier system mandated by government basically says that, okay, there has to be a distributor right there in the middle. So he will receive the beer from the brewer, and then he will sell it to the end user. And sometimes the end user happens to be a tavern or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and sometimes the end user happens to be a grocery store, because I know that there's all kinds of weird things to where, in some places, brewers over a certain size can't sell directly to a grocer.
Yeah. I have lived on the East Coast. I've lived on the West Coast. I've lived in New England. I've lived in the South. And I've seen so many variations on how you can buy beer. I've lived
Walmart
in places.
Walmart sells beer, which is crazy because in Massachusetts, they don't.
Right.
In some states, in Pennsylvania, where Chris used to live and I lived, you could not buy beer at a grocery store. You could not buy beer at Walmart.
You can't buy it in Massachusetts. I literally just moved here from Massachusetts. And,
yeah.
You can't buy beer or wine at any grocery store.
Do you have to go to a state store? Or to a beer distributor?
You had to go to a liquor beer distributor.
Or they have, like, it's weird because they'll have, like, little tiny stores.
Right.
That can sell it, but not, like, big grocery stores.
Yeah.
And but that's, again, Pennsylvania doesn't allow
you can
that.
Have, like, a mini grocery store.
Yeah. Pennsylvania wouldn't allow that.
You've got to go to a beer distributor and then buy a case. You can't just buy a six-pack.
And here's what gets even scarier, and I'll talk about Pennsylvania in particular. They have different levels that were imposed by the state of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, different levels of distributors. So you could be a master distributor, which meant you buy directly from the brewers, or you were a middle-tier distributor who bought from the master distributor. It is just such insanity.
But luckily, some of these regulations are being repealed.
Some of them are, and this comes to us from Draft Magazine. I'm doing a pulling the keg motion on that one.
Let me guess. This is a magazine devoted to all things beer.
I would imagine. But several states are making long-awaited updates to their beer laws, and we'll get into those in just a moment.
We will, and your calls and thoughts, welcome. What kind of beer do you like? Do you like the good beer? Do you like craft beer?
Do you like gluten-free beer?
Or do you only like that pig swill, like Budweiser?
Oh, man.
855-450-FREE.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Worden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing too. Invest in Liberty and property. Mark Worden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we're talking beer.
And we like it.
We do. I
cheers
like
to beers.
Good beer. And I had actually purchased some recently. I bought it for the explicit reason of I wanted to marinate a steak with it. And I've not actually drank one of the beers yet. So I might crack one open tonight. I forget exactly what it is. It's like a winter something with orange.
That sounds good.
Sounds like it might be good. There was a chocolate milk stout.
I've had those.
That I bought not too long ago. And, you know, it had, I've had milk stouts
milk
before.
And beer?
No.
Milk stout is, it's a style of stout. It isn't,
right.
Doesn't
so
taste like milk.
I've had milk stouts before.
Yep.
And I've had chocolate stouts before. And I was like, a chocolate milk stout might be pretty good. It tasted like coffee, and I don't like coffee, so I gave it to somebody. So, you know, like, there are times when you gamble on thinking that you're going to like a specific beer. But I do like very unique beers.
Yeah. So, we'll get into this story. It comes to us from Draft Magazine. If you like beer, I would highly recommend you check out Draft Magazine. And the title of it is Several States Making Long-Awaited Changes to Their Beer Laws. As we discussed last week, wacky beer...
Well, we didn't discuss it. They did.
They did. But there's a link to the article, and it's pretty interesting, too, talking about wacky beer laws, beer-related laws in the states across this great union of ours. But just as the arc of the moral universe bends ever closer towards justice, it also bends towards common-sense beer legislation. Lawmakers in several states have recently proposed or passed bills that could make it easier for brewers to make and sell their beers and easier for you to drink it. This is government in action, folks. Well, we'll wait and see about that. We have a pretty high bar for what we consider government action.
I would prefer government inaction.
All right, just get the hell out of beer.
Leave
beer alone and then we're all good.
Not in action, but inaction, meaning they're not doing anything. But if you're repealing laws, that's the good kind of action.
I agree. First, we've got Georgia on the mind because a bill that would allow beer and liquor manufacturers to sell directly to consumers passed the state house on Monday. If approved by the state Senate, which is likely, and signed by Governor Nathan Deal, the law's passage would end a years-long battle between Peach State Brewers and the wholesalers who currently hold exclusive rights to purchase beer from the people who make it. It would also enable brewers to end clumsy workarounds involving sales of souvenir glassware, which could then be filled with beer from a brewer's taproom, or charging varying prices for brewery tours that conclude with a, quote, souvenir, unquote, pint or take-home six-packs or cases of beer. Georgia is currently one of just two states in the entire country that doesn't allow direct on-site sales to brewery customers. The other one is Mississippi.
And I really like the workaround here. Yeah, I love when people find loopholes in laws. And what they're saying here is, you pay X amount of money for a tour of our brewery.
Right.
And then as a thank you for touring, here's a six-pack.
Or here's a souvenir glass that you may refill here in our tap room six times before you go home or whatever. Usually it's like twice. But yeah, it's silly. If you make something, you should be allowed to sell it to people who want to buy it.
Yes.
And you should not have government sitting here saying, no, before you can sell it to that guy, you first have to sell it to that guy who will then sell it to that guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How does that make sense in any possible universe?
Yeah.
So, speaking of Mississippi, House Bill 1322, which will permit breweries making fewer than 60,000 barrels of beer a year to sell bottles or cans directly to customers who visit the brewery, is headed to Governor Phil Bryant to be signed or vetoed. The bill would enable brewers to sell up to 2 cases of beer per day to any one person, but would cap the total amount allowed for on-site sales each year to at either 1,500 barrels or 10% of the total amount of beer produced at the brewery, whichever is lesser. Baby steps, says the article. Okay, so that to me is just one of those things that, you know, okay, well, I know we got a lot of campaign contributions from these brewers, so we got to throw them a bone for something, but we still want to exercise control.
And, right.
And the big breweries, they still give us even more money, so this will keep them happy.
Well, and I have to wonder how in, you know, state legislative elections, how often, you know, InBev and some of the other large companies are just giving money to state reps? Or is it just that the state reps believe the lies that they hear in testimony? Because I remember, again, when the state of Alabama was voting to increase the allowed ABV, one of the state reps literally said on the floor of the state house, if we pass this, teenagers will buy this high alcohol beer and they'll get drunk faster and there will literally be blood flowing in the streets.
Oh, blood flowing is such a great line anytime you want to scare the heck out of people.
So let me explain for people that don't know the price of high alcohol beers. The beers that I like are like, you know, generally in the $2 to $3 per bottle.
Yeah.
You know, I looked PBR, the Pabst Blue Ribbon. You can get a six pack for $5.
Right.
I like beers that cost $5
a beer.
For a beer.
Yeah. Yeah, I've noticed that with just about anything. I have really expensive taste. Doesn't matter if it's clothes, beer, wine.
But the point is, you know, this constant fear that teenagers are going to suddenly, you know, dip in and buy a Santa Claus for $8 a bottle is absolutely absurd.
Right. A group of teenagers that scrounge up $25, they're not going to say, get me a six-pack of that high-class stuff. They're going to say to whoever it is that's getting them beer, get me as much as you can.
My high school experience.
I can get you a 30-rack of PBR. All right.
Yes.
Cool. And you better have change because I know that's not $25.
The beer selection was completely dependent on how much money we could scrounge up amongst ourselves. And we were interested in two things. Well, one thing. It was how many of them can we get for this much money? That was it. That was
it. What do
you
mean, beer? It was so much cheaper to get a pint of cheap vodka.
Well, yeah. And sometimes we did that, but I've...
Jungle juice, God.
Oh, boy. All right. So back to this story. Mississippi takes baby steps. They allow brewers to sell up to 2 cases a day. And now Minnesota is no longer blue on Sundays, at least. New legislation signed by Governor Mark Dayton last week ended a 159-year-old blue law banning Sunday sales at liquor stores. Starting July 2nd, liquor stores will be able to open from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the Lord's Day, which means no more Sunday morning beer runs to Wisconsin.
So this is something that has always sort of confused me. Well, not only, you know, the whole thing of a lot of Christians thinking that Sunday is the Sabbath, but the fact that, you know, you can't buy alcohol on Sunday. Well, doesn't that just mean that, you know, people that plan ahead are going to buy twice as much on Saturday?
Yeah, of course.
And then what about, you know, places where they've got NFL football teams to where, you know, people want to, at the game, have a few beers.
Yeah.
And I think it was the Tennessee Titans when they had relocated to Tennessee from Houston. There was some kind of thing to where I believe Tennessee still had some kind of prohibition on Sunday alcohol sales.
But isn't it like you can serve alcohol on Sunday at restaurants and stuff?
In not different everywhere. Areas, yeah.
Not everywhere.
That's what? The thing. It's a patchwork quilt of bad
right.
laws.
So they had to like come up with some emergency legislation to where they could sell alcohol up until the third quarter, but only during the games.
Oh, I think that's in Massachusetts, too.
This is Free Talk Live. Your calls and thoughts welcome. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We'll get back into the beer discussion here in just a moment. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And how would you like to try the best pillow you've ever used? How would you like to try that pillow risk-free for 60 days? I'm talking about MyPillow. It's designed to fit to the shape of your body and keep your neck in the proper position. I've been using it for close to a year, and it's the best pillow I've ever had. And unlike a regular pillow that winds up collecting a lot of dead skin and dirt and just getting all kinds of nasty.
That is just gross, Daryl.
You can take your MyPillow, throw it in the washer, throw it in the dryer, and it's still usable. It doesn't turn into something you would use to start a fire with. Go to MyPillow.com, use code FTL to get your very own MyPillow at half price, or you can get a second pillow free of charge. And remember, if you don't like the pillow in the first 60 days, you get your money back, less the shipping. And the pillow itself is guaranteed to last you 10 years. That's code FTL, not slash, mypillow.com. Use code FTL as in Free Talk Live.
Nice. Well, we've been talking beer all night. Did this get spurred on by your story about Ireland? I think it
maybe.
I think we're all, everybody but Daryl, who doesn't like to have fun. We've all been talking a little bit about St. Patrick's Day and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I don't know how Irish I am, but I do know that there is some. Again, I believe I mentioned earlier in the show, I had a 23andMe done a while back, and they lump British and Irish in the same little quadrant thing.
Well, I think all it takes tomorrow will be an Irish or a green T-shirt, and then you can claim 100% Irish status. Mm-hmm. And if there are any tax benefits to that, you should claim those too at that point.
Yeah,
I avoid as many taxes as possible. The only taxes that I haven't been able to avoid are fuel taxes that in New Hampshire they call a road toll because they know how much people in New Hampshire hate taxes. And every now and then I'll pay a meals tax.
Yep. Well, we've been talking about a couple states at least trying to do away with some of the sillier laws that relate to beer. And we talked a little bit about Georgia allowing more direct sales coming from brewers directly to end users so they don't have to go through some crazy kind of workarounds and loopholes by saying, okay, we'll sell you a souvenir pint glass and we'll fill it with beer for you. Or Mississippi, which is allowing brewers to actually start selling up to 2 cases a day directly to them. Minnesota ending some blue laws that banned Sunday sales in liquor stores, and that's where you can get beer in Minnesota. Now they'll be open from 11 to 6 p.m. on Sundays. The next
one up.
Well,
that's really nice. And I remember when Alabama, back 20-some-odd years ago, decided to allow Sunday alcohol sales. You could not sell alcohol before noon on Sunday.
Right. That's fairly common in states that still... Or they had those blue laws before.
Yeah, and New Hampshire, where we live, there's a really weird thing in statute to where you can't buy alcohol at the store after 11, I think it's 11:45 at night, between 11:45 p.m. and 6 a.m., you cannot buy alcohol.
Yeah.
And the claim is, oh, it's to keep drunk drivers off the roads.
It saves lives.
The bars stay open until like 1 o'clock in the morning, and you can buy alcohol until like, you know, right up to then.
This is the insanity of these laws. People want to buy what they want to buy, whether it's tissue paper or whether it's beer. It doesn't matter.
So, I'll tell you how I found out about this prohibition in New Hampshire on purchasing alcohol after, you know, sometime at night. I worked a late second shift, and I got off work at like 2 o'clock in the morning, stopped at a CVS to pick up a birthday card and a bottle of wine and a little celebratory bag thing that was, sure, you know, like, here's the bag, put the thing in, and like tissue paper to cover the wine.
We call that man wrapping.
That's and, the other thing ahead. Is in Massachusetts, pharmacies like Rite Aid and CVS, they don't sell beer or liquor either. So weird when I first came up here and I walked in, I'm like, is that beer in Rite Aid?
Somebody left a bunch of beer in the Rite Aid.
So I go to check out and the guy says, I can't sell this to you. And I was like, why not? Well, because, you know, there's this thing, I can't buy the wine before 6 a.m. What? Why? Well, to prevent drunk driving. And I said, you can see I'm making this as a birthday gift for somebody. I've got the birthday card and the bag.
And the point is, you know, this is the idea. In the name of public safety, we may have to infringe upon the rights of some of our citizens. And you all understand it's okay. This is to save the children or save the whales or save whatever.
Right.
But to do so, we're going to take something that should be it's a completely natural right to exchange goods. That's something that pre-existed government. It pre-existed everything. I had wheat. Daryl had ducks. I needed ducks. I gave Daryl wheat. There you go. Big frickin' deal. And maybe it was mead and maybe I had corn. It doesn't matter.
Mead.
But doing exchanging and doing commerce, this is something that was around for thousands of years.
Yeah.
And somehow we feel that we can not only regulate it, we can violate your rights and we can tell you when and what you can buy, but we're doing this and we're telling you, we're trying to convince you that it's for all the best reasons. So you'll just sit back and take it.
And the whole thing of, oh, you've got to show an ID when you buy Sudafed now because you might be a meth dealer. What? I've got a runny nose. You can see that, you know, my eyes are puffy. I need this Sudafed to help with the, you know, sniffling, sneezing, something, something.
Do what I do, Daryl. When they give you that signature, you know, that machine, every time I write on it, when I buy, in my case, Claritin D, instead of signing my name, I write, not Walter Wright. That's what I write. And nice. There we go. Yes, I'm not running a meth lab.
So, back to the article from Draft Magazine, Maryland and Utah.
Maryland and Utah. Meanwhile, in Maryland, a new brewery proposal proposed by the makers of Guinness has inspired several versions of a bill that could increase the amount of beer breweries are allowed to sell out of their tap rooms. Currently, brewers can only sell 500 barrels of beer per year over the counter. Beer and liquor giant Diageo, undoubtedly mispronouncing
Diageo
that.
Is how I would pronounce it.
Yep. Has asked lawmakers to bump their limit up to 5,000 barrels to accommodate the 250,000 visitors the company expects to visit its new Guinness brewing facility in Relay after its proposed fall 2017 opening. The Brewers Association of Maryland has jumped on board, supporting a separate bill that will allow all brewers in the Old Line State to sell up to 4,000 barrels through their tap rooms, but would require them to close at 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and at midnight Friday and Saturday. That version of the bill will have a public hearing on Thursday. And again,
which was today.
Yeah.
And we'll get to Utah here in a moment. Let's go to the phones. We've got Vernon calling in from Louisiana. Vernon, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
You know, it's funny to listen to you all talk about the liquor laws up in the Northeast. I always thought the Northeast was a bit more open-minded, but down here in Louisiana, we're able to buy liquor pretty much 24/7. In fact, I think there's a state law that prohibits local laws that prohibit the sale of liquor. At, you know, so it's available in a convenience store, at Walmart, at a drugstore. door 24/7. And we also have, you'll probably have heard of this, in some parishes, they allow you to buy daiquiris through a drive-through.
Right.
I've heard that. And...
cup, and as long as you don't put the straw in there, it's not considered an open container.
Yeah,
it's basically like a bar where you drive through. Now, we pay for it as far as our insurance, but it's just funny to hear, you know, like, and even the bar is closing at 1 o'clock up there. It's crazy to think of that the Northeast is more conservative.
Well, let me remind you. Vernon, let me remind you that the Puritans landed in Massachusetts, and a lot of that mindset has not entirely gone away in some respects.
What are you trying to say about people from Massachusetts, Daryl?
Well, it's true, and to Vernon's point, I mean, that's sort of this patchwork quilt of different areas that take different approaches to it. Now, on one level, I'm a believer that local is generally better, and communities might be able to have some say in what they do. But, you know, quit just infringing on my rights. That's all I want.
Vernon, thank you for the call. Hour 3 coming up next after the news. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE.
Ross Ulbricht was convicted in early 2015 of running the infamous Silk Road Underground Market. The Silk Road was a gift to humanity and helped reduce the harms brought on by drug prohibition. For this good deed, Ross has been sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. Now, an appeal is Ross's only chance, and he needs your support. Please visit FreeRoss.org, where you can contribute via various methods, including Bitcoin. Visit FreeRoss.org. That's FreeRoss.org.
This is Free Talk Live, kicking off hour number 3, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we've been talking about beer, specifically laws regarding the regulation of beer, and more specifically, some of the states that have recently either changed their laws to open it up a little bit. The article from Draft Magazine specifically in regards to Mississippi says baby steps. And that's exactly what some of this is. It's baby steps, but
I think all of them are. You know, they're taking an area of our economy that has always been really heavily regulated and regulated through fear, because almost every one of these comes down to, well, you know, teenagers are going to get a hold of beer, and you know how teenagers are, and
there's a country that actually neighbors the United States to where I believe the legal drinking age is you must be able to say cerveza.
Interesting.
Mexico.
Huh. Well, yeah. We're trying to keep them out anyway.
Right, but I'm just pointing out that, you know, there are some countries in the world that they don't restrict as tightly as we do who is allowed to drink alcohol. And I have never found the logic in, at 18, you're able to sign up for the military and go overseas and be shot at.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to purchase alcohol. You're allowed to vote.
This is the problem.
But you're not allowed to purchase alcohol.
Parents need to teach your own kids, you know, if they're going to drink, how to be responsible when you drink. Stop, you know, passing your responsibility as a parent onto government. Like, these laws aren't going to stop your kids from drinking. Right. So don't not have that conversation with your child about, you know, if someone offers you alcohol, what you should do in a situation. If you decide not to listen to my parental advice and drink, please at least call me if something goes wrong. Right. Like, don't close off those lines of communication with your kids. And I don't know, this just sparked a little.
And I want to correct something. Apparently, the drinking age in Mexico is 18. I had always been told that there wasn't one.
Well, I appreciate your humility.
Yeah, and I expect there's some. I mean, another myth that's always been told, and I can't confirm or deny it, but in Germany, I've always heard it was, you know, if you're old enough to reach over the bar, then you were okay. But some countries have much looser societal
Germany
feelings.
16, 13 if accompanied by a custodian for beer and wine, 18 for spirits and elements containing spirits above negligible amount.
And another thing that I've heard is that cultures that were more accepting of alcohol when it's more a part of their life tend to have lower rates of alcoholism and abuse. Italy, Germany, things like that.
No drinking age.
Hmm. Yeah, well, there you go. So again,
Luxembourg.
And people think these laws and stuff actually work. And, you know, I think that is a huge reason that, like, I don't know the term for it, but how, like, so many parents out there think because of these drug laws that our kids our kids aren't going to do drugs. And this is the reason that a number of my friends, you know, have passed away from drug use, you know, because I think, too, a lot of it has to do with the family not having talked with your children and said, you know, like, this is out there. And this, like, if it happens, and if you do decide to try alcohol or drugs or anything, like, come tell me about it. But that conversation doesn't take place in most
And that's
families.
Why, growing up, I never really drank or did drugs, because my dad said, if you want to drink or do drugs, let me know. I'll get it for you. And I was like, well,
that kind of takes the fun out of it.
No.
I get where you're going with that. And my mom at one point came up with this idea, which was, I know you're going to go out. I know you're going to drink. So if you need a ride home, just don't drive the car. I'll come get you. And I will promise you this, you'll not get grounded. You'll not get in trouble. And I thought that was a pretty cool approach to it.
Yeah,
how many times did you
take her up on it? Never
once. Did you go to a payphone and collect call for, hey, mom, come pick me up?
Yeah, it was never that.
No, my mom was almost the exact same way in terms of, like, when I was old enough to, when I was old enough to do what I want.
Right. When you knew better than your parents.
I think it was when I was like 16, or it was either 16 and a half or 17, but I went out and I got like completely hammered, and I had my mom's, well, one of my mother's vehicles at the time. And I called her and she came and picked me up at like 3 o'clock in the morning. She was not happy.
Right.
You know, but
to be expected.
She was not happy that she had to come at like 3 o'clock in the morning, but she was really happy the next day that I didn't drive.
Right.
And she did give me that positive reinforcement.
It's better than getting the call from the hospital going, we got your daughter in here. And
I remember literally coming up to a stoplight and like opening the passenger door to get sick. It was that bad.
It's always a proud moment.
It was that jungle juice.
Yeah.
So let's get back into the article and actually recap, because we covered most of this in hour two from Draft Magazine. Georgia recently passed, and this has gone to the governor for a signature, passed a bill that would allow beer and liquor manufacturers to sell directly to consumers. And more on, you know, expanding your ability to purchase alcohol in a bit. Mississippi wound up allowing on-site sales, and then they put a cap at it at either 1,500 barrels or 10% of the total amount of beer produced at the brewery, whichever is less. Minnesota got rid of their blue law regarding the purchase of alcohol. At least that's been on the books for 159 years. Maryland, I don't remember if we covered this or not.
Yeah, we did, but they're going to bump the limit up to 5,000 barrels allowed per year to be sold directly from breweries. So these are all in
currently they're only allowed to sell 500, so they're, you know, increasing it tenfold.
Yeah.
So what's the, like, what is their justification for putting a limit on it?
It's, well, I think it's interesting because in any other group of people, or pretty much on any other radio show, I suspect, people will be sitting going, hey, this is great. These are all great moves. They're giving people more freedom. They're able to do a little bit more than they could before. Unfortunately,
well, to answer your question about what's the argument. Go ahead, Kurt.
No, I mean, my point is that we take a very libertarian stance.
Correct.
And the libertarian stance on this is get government out of this completely. Quit regulating something that has been sold for millennia.
Right.
And trying to apply your moral or trying to protect businesses that contribute heavily to your campaigns.
Right. So to answer the question about why are there limits, I can't say specifically for Maryland, but I do know a little bit about the beer laws in New Hampshire because I've been to several of the committee hearings on various things to relax some of the regulations. And there are certain thresholds of, at least in New Hampshire, once a brewer produces a certain amount of a product, they have to make that available to a distributor, and they're no longer allowed to sell directly. So the limit could be tied to that in Maryland. I don't know, but it's something to where, you know, all of the regulations should be wiped out.
So these regulations on, like, the barrels for the brewers, does that include, like, barrels that they sell to distributors?
No, or is this just solely direct to the public.
Okay, yeah. From there. Okay, yeah. So they can distribute as much as they want to distributors?
It depends on the license that they have.
There, right.
It depends on the license that they have.
Sure.
So if you're a microbrew, or what they call in New Hampshire a nanobrew, because they wanted to come up with a different name so that they could say New Hampshire is the only state with a nanobrewer. It's just a different word for microbrew.
Right.
There are limits on how much you can sell. There's another license that increases how much you can produce. And then once you cross a certain threshold, you have to sell to distributors. And then there's the mega things to where all of it has to go to distributors. So there's a lot of different tiers.
Right.
And it depends on which license. We'll finish this story, plus get into the Amazon Prime delivering beer to your house, maybe. This is Free Talk Live. Yeah! This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're talking beer. The we being Daryl
and Heather
and Chris.
And we'll finally finish this article from Draft Magazine. But first, want to make sure that I tell you about Bitcoin.com. Why? Well, Bitcoin.com is the most unique online destination in the Bitcoin universe. Want to buy Bitcoin? Do it here. Want to speak your mind to other Bitcoin users? The forum at Bitcoin.com is always open and censorship-free at forum.bitcoin.com. There are no bigger Bitcoin believers than the Bitcoin.com team. That's why this site is a one-stop shop for everything you need to get into Bitcoin life. You can also play games at games.bitcoin.com. Learn more at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com.
So, yeah, we've been talking about this this article from Draft Magazine where a lot of states have loosened up a number of their beer laws or alcohol laws. And I'm not going to recap them all again because I think we've recapped this 5 or 10 times. But
Georgia, Mississippi, Minnesota, and Maryland are the states that we've covered.
Right.
And there's one more state in the article, and it's one that, you know, kind of surprised me that they would loosen their laws.
Well, it would be surprising, and that's the exact opposite of what they've done here. In Utah, legislators in that state have capped draft beer at 4% ABV, or alcohol by volume, just passed a bill that would lower the legal blood alcohol content for drivers from 0.08% to 0.05%. The bill is now headed for the desk of the governor, Gary Herbert, who said he plans to sign it. Once approved, the law would make Utah's DUI threshold the lowest in the nation.
So I'm not shocked that Utah would tighten restrictions.
Yeah.
You know, when I saw Utah on the list here, I'm thinking,
you were thinking, okay,
oh, wow, Utah finally did something good in regards to beer
laws. All I think of when I think of Utah is that McMuffin guy. McMullen, whatever his name.
Evan McMullen.
Whatever his
McMuffin.
Name was.
Oh, God.
Craft beer at 4%. So there's maybe like a craft beer that people in Utah can buy now?
Yeah, I can imagine some pilsners, and you know, you can brew a light draft beer, in a microbrewery, but you know, face it, the stuff that's good, and if you're a beer drinker, I'm sure you'll agree, the stuff that's good typically has it. It's that 4.5 to, you know, maybe up to 7 or 8% is still drinkable.
Yeah,
there's
it's
a
very
mead
drinkable
that yeah. I like that's made in Louisville, Kentucky, by Bluegrass Brewing. Its official name is Luna de Miel, the honeymoon ale, but mm-hmm. it's a raspberry mead. It's like 8.97% ABV.
Yeah. I've had 10, 12, 13, 14% beers. And when you get to a certain level of alcohol content, to me, the alcohol becomes a little overpowering and right. I don't get as much of the taste. Yeah. It almost becomes more of an aperitif. It's, you know, something you sip yeah. and you usually serve those kinds of things in a snifter as opposed to a, you know, pilsner glass or a
mug. And then there are, you know, some beers to where I really think that they just, you know, do something of, let's see how much ABV we can get in this thing just to say we did, and nobody ever drinks it. They just buy it because of the uniqueness.
Alcohol.
So
that
there's the one that it's like 60% ABV that they put the bottle inside of a taxidermied squirrel.
Right, right. So let's come up with a clever marketing gimmick to sell this thing.
Right, and so it's a, you know,
yeah,
it's basically a souvenir.
And I think for people that are really into beer, that enjoy beer, they're not chasing numbers. What they're chasing is flavor and things
right.
like that. And for most of these states, they have loosened things up enough. Let me start that over. They've loosened things up so that they can get more of their products out into the hands of the consumers
correct.
Who demand them. And that's a good thing.
See,
there's a long way to go, and I think we'd all agree on every one of these states that they
yes.
could do more.
Yeah. My whole thing is like, okay, so the state wants to argue this is all in the name of public safety, right?
Right.
Then wouldn't the smarter thing to do be like put a breathalyzer instead of giving them to all the cops, right, to just give to people as they see fit, give them to all the restaurants that serve liquor and say, hey, guess what, when you pass this little threshold, you know, then you can drive home. I mean, it's, I'm not saying that I support that, I'm just saying, wouldn't that be like the safer bet, right? Because then nobody'd be leaving unless they blew what was legally allowed to be drivable upon the roads.
Yeah, but even that is an arbitrary number. There have been a lot
correct.
Of studies where
I remember when I was younger, the legal limit was 0.1.
Right.
Yeah.
And for DUI, when I was growing up, it was 0.15. You know, that's literally twice what it is in most states. It's typically almost twice. It's 0.08 in
right.
most states.
I think, too, a lot of people think that if you didn't have, like, DUI legal limit laws and stuff like that, that somehow, like, it's like with any other law, it doesn't actually stop bad behavior. Because people that do reckless and negligent things, they don't follow laws. They
right.
just do it because that's their behavior, right? So there's still punishment for anybody that hits a car, hits a pedestrian, kills
absolutely.
Somebody. There's laws that, you know,
to cover all those things.
That. There doesn't need to be a law that punishes just the act of drinking a beer and then getting behind the wheel because of an arbitrary number.
Right. And
so the libertarian position is that, you know, especially with regulations too, regulating it, right? The libertarian position would be, hey, if somebody makes a beer and you know if it's 5% or 13%, you, the individual, is responsible if you decide to put that into your body.
Right, and you're responsible for knowing how much your body can handle, how much
yep.
you can handle,
right.
and if you're going to get behind the wheel of an automobile,
you
and have a you responsibility.
Cause an accident.
You have a responsibility to be
yep.
safe.
Right, yep. And one beer is going to affect me different than it affects Heather.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to affect Heather different than it affects Chris, and it's going to affect Chris different yeah. than it does me.
And when all of us say we all drink to 0.08, depending on how many beers that takes or how many whatever we're drinking, we could all be at 0.08, and we will have, undoubtedly, we'll have three different levels of skill when driving.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's also
gonna affect everybody differently.
It's going to take us different amounts to get to that, depending on
right.
tolerance.
Have we eaten while we were drinking? How quickly did we drink?
Was it a hot day? Were we sweating it out as fast as we were drinking it?
Mm-hmm. Right. So,
yeah.
you know, did I drink three beers over the course of 5 hours, or did I drink three beers in 15 minutes.
So yeah. We used to go to the Preakness. The Preakness Stakes, it's one of horse racing's Triple Crown. Mm-hmm. You know, it's held down in Baltimore. And yep. Some years it would be just blistering hot. It'd be like 80, 90 degrees. I'd go through a 30-pack of beer. A cans, you know, and definitely be drunk at the end. But
you
what else could
say.
I... Right, but the point is on a really hot day, you can go through a whole lot of beer.
Right, because
but you're not
going to
be right, and things are
being,
flowing through your system.
Instead of being a reasonable person and drinking some water in between those beers.
Oh, that is with the water too.
This is Free Talk Live. Your calls and thoughts welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
Your amp will directly change more lives by getting Free Talk Live in front of people looking for talk radio online and on the air. You can help by joining the AMP program for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com and getting perks. That's amp.freetalklive.com.
This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we will head back to the phones. We've been talking about beer laws, specifically several states relaxing them. One state tightening up, Utah decreasing the legal blood alcohol content from 0.8 to 0.5. And we've actually got Josh calling in from Utah. Josh, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. So I heard you guys talking about the beer laws in terms of Utah changing them from 0.08 to 0.5 being the lowest now in the country. And just wanted to give you guys this, how most Utahns feel around here, at least the ones I've talked to myself. And everyone just feels as though this is a money grab by the state, that this isn't actually about public safety, that this isn't about betterment for the community, because none of the punishments or any of the anything else regarding it really has changed or affected. They're just simply lowering the limit to make a bigger net to catch more people.
Right.
Causing it so that more people can DUI.
Yeah, and, I don't doubt it.
So the one thing is, I'm not saying that I think that the punishment should necessarily be increased or anything like that, being very liberty-oriented myself. But the one thing that a lot of people brought up is that if this is really about, you know, public safety and, you know, the betterment of the community, why aren't we taking our tax money and investing it more into our public transportation? Granted, I'm not saying that, and I know how the view is with taking tax money and, you know, with you guys on the show and stuff like that and investing in the public works, but it just goes to show that this isn't really about betterment for the public good, because we have an option to make it so it's easier for people to get to and from the bars and, you know, restaurants and have a drink and safely get home. Instead, what do? They take the old, tired, you know, route of, well, let's make it so that we catch more people or increase the penalties instead of actually trying to do something that would alleviate the situation, such as making it easier for people to get around without having to drive.
I wonder if, like, Uber has had anything to do with this.
I was wondering that, too.
You know what I mean? What, like, think about how many people now, because of the availability of Uber and its affordability, they're no longer drinking and driving, which has made the revenue of DUIs at the previous, was it, point
.08.
Yeah. Go down because there's less people actually drinking and driving because there's more public transit.
That would be a really interesting statistic. I mean, did they do...
If there's a correlation.
I agree completely with what you're saying, and I have no doubt. The only thing we said about public safety is that's how it's sold to the public. That's how...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But is Uber a thing? Has like Salt Lake City cracked down on Uber drivers or other systems?
No, actually, Uber's very embraced in Utah
and
Salt Lake City. And that's one of the things around here, surprisingly, is a lot of people, especially a lot of the college students that don't have cars, or if they even do, if they're going out drinking or anyone for that matter, a lot of times, they will take an Uber home or they will take the track system and the bus system home. So that's why a lot of people feel that it is a money grab, that this isn't about public safety, that if we were to look at open the books, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that there was actually a decrease in the number of people an increase of people taking Uber and a decrease of people driving home.
I'm going to have to make that my little project.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that for the caller, but I would love to see what the DUI statistics have been for the last, three years.
Look at the government's reporting for like number of OUIs and stuff like that in the like annual year, and then like find out like when Uber first became available, like what year for you guys.
Well, we do know that statistics were done in Austin because they actually compared, here's what the DUI conviction rate was before Uber and Lyft came into town. Uber and Lyft get booted out, and the rate has gone back up. It dropped a good bit when Uber and Lyft moved into Austin, Texas, and then almost immediately jumped back to what it was prior to Uber and Lyft going into Austin. And my guess is, if you were able to find numbers for Salt Lake, it would probably be the same.
I think we're all going to dig into this a little bit and see where it's at. But I'd love to see, the statistics on DUI over the last, say, 3 years, the statistics that Uber may put out on ridership or any other services like that, and see if there's really, where's the emergency here? Why do we have to drop this from 0.08 and let the state defend that?
Well, I've actually got an article pulled up from Fox 13, and Josh, thank you for the call. Jim Dabikas, who's a senator from Salt Lake, said it makes Utah look like a peculiar people at a time when the state is clamoring for tourist dollars. Senator Luz Escamilla rhetorically asked, why not just make it 0.0? Noting that drinking laws in Europe have people as young as 15 consuming alcohol. And the reason she mentioned Europe is a previous senator said, well, in Europe, the alcohol limit is lower than what it is in the United States.
Right. But they also have a much more robust public transit system and things like that tend to support it. And again, because it's more a part of their culture, people don't tend to just go out to drink because it's forbidden and that, this is my one chance to get out and go out. If you're used to stopping and having a couple beers every day after work.
Why not just make it illegal for restaurants to sell beer? You can buy beer at the grocery store, but you have to consume it at home. It's pretty soon going to wind up basically being like that.
Yeah.
Because you can't walk home from the bar. That's public intoxication. You can't drive home from the bar. That's,
drunk driving. Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Tony calling in from a brewery. Actually, Tony, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
It was Stony Minister. Hi, Heather.
Hi.
Thou shalt not bear false witness, which you have done on Free Talk Live.
I just read the name Tony, which is what the board op gave us. Tony, thank you for the call. Let's go to Skype, where we've got Mr. Will Coley. Will, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey there, guys. How you doing, man?
Doing all right.
Hi, Will.
Good. Hi, Will.
So we actually had the discussion about this last year here in Tennessee, but they were a lot more open about the true reasoning for wanting to pass this new blood alcohol limit. You had a representative from the state went on local talk radio and basically said, we want to drop the blood alcohol limit like a half a point from what it is now. So I think it was like 6 and they want to make it 5.5 or something along those lines.
Okay.
And they were very, very clear that the purpose of doing so was because it would create another $10 million in revenue for the state of Tennessee on DUI arrests and fines. Like, they were straight up, like, didn't have anything, like, this little tiny amount of alcohol wouldn't make any difference in the safety of right. the people of Tennessee, but it would generate an extra $10 million in revenues for the state.
God, it's so horrible that I actually admire government when they're at least honest.
So they didn't
like
even
that.
They didn't even pretend that this was about public safety. They just flat out said, "We need money. Here's an easy way to get money."
Pretty much. They were, I mean, they were very, very candid. I was shocked. They came on, it's called The Phil Show. It's
kind of a
lifetime show here. And I was shocked by how candid he was when he was like, well, I'm not really sure about the safety, but I do know that it'll create another $10 million in revenue for the state of Tennessee.
Will, I'm not sure if you've got more. If you do, please hold. If not, thank you for the call. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live, possibly time for you and your thoughts if you call in now to 855-450-FREE. 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And when you shop online, how about supporting Free Talk Live? And you can actually do that by shopping online, by starting your shopping experience at shop.freetalklive.com. There's links to Amazon, Amazon US, Canada, UK, links to several other shopping outlets, including Newegg. And you don't actually have to go to shop.freetalklive.com every time you shop. Just go there and then bookmark the link that you're going to use, shop.freetalklive.com. And speaking of Amazon, apparently, and I said early in the show that, you know, you can get almost anything. You can't get alcohol. Well, apparently that's changing ... for some people who are Prime members in certain places. The story comes from the Columbus Dispatch. They say the Seattle-based online retailer is adding beer and wine to its Prime Now service in Central Ohio and Cincinnati.
Woohoo!
The company applied for liquor permits last year and was coy at the time when asked whether it would add those products to its vast list of deliverables. That list included about everything from cat litter to trampolines and potatoes to televisions. Stephanie Landry, vice president of Prime Now, said in a press release, "We're excited to continue expanding our product offerings, and we know consumers will get or will love getting wine and beer delivered right to their doorsteps in 1 hour or less." So this is absolutely amazing. So not only will they be selling beer and wine ... for certain customers in certain locations, they'll get it to you in less than an hour.
Nice. And I'm sure there's some charges that go along with it, but that's what the market does. If there's a demand, there's going to be somebody that steps up and is willing to fulfill that demand. The pain is when government steps in and says, no, because of this reason or that reason, we're not going to allow you to conduct business, even though you have a willing customer with money who wants to give it to you.
Right. And, you know, this seems to be expand. And I've not heard of this Prime Now specifically by name. Now, I right. do recall hearing something couple years ago, I think it was, about Amazon wanting to get into the distribution.
They've done that in certain areas, and it's on certain products and things like that. But I know they do that with Amazon Pantry in some areas, too, where you can buy your groceries online and have them delivered right to your door, too.
And,
so,
you know, this seems to be something that I'm surprised the post office hasn't gone after them on some kind of something. And I'm surprised that the lobbyist for UPS and FedEx haven't tried prohibiting them.
I heard that you could actually, this might be a little tiny bit off topic, but I heard you could use, like, in some states, like California, I guess, they were using Uber to, like, pick up food and drinks.
Right. And that Uber kind of stuff. Is doing Uber Eats in certain locations.
So you could order an Uber, give him money, have them go pick up, like, a keg of beer and like bring it to your house.
Or I don't think so, because that's a straw purchase of alcohol that is prohibited in most places.
Yeah. But if you were an Uber driver and you like walked in and to any liquor store and purchased a bunch of 30 racks, I mean, they're not going to be like, oh, no, you can't, because they don't know you're an Uber driver. I mean, is it a crime for an Uber driver to walk in, buy a bunch of beer, and then go deliver it to a house?
It's a crime in a lot of places for me to purchase alcohol.
There's no open container.
It's called a straw purchase.
Right.
It's called a straw purchase, which is illegal in a lot of places, including New Hampshire.
Right. So, like, if I didn't know you and you said, you know, okay, I'm your Uber driver. Here's some money. Go buy me booze. Okay. I could say, well, I need to see ID first, and you could say, well, you're an Uber driver, and I have to show you my ID. You know what I mean? And there's a whole list of state regulations about who can take money in exchange for alcohol. None of it makes any sense. I'm not defending the system. I'm just saying there's a boatload of laws out there
to prevent trade. Food delivery, because, you know, you can call up a Chinese restaurant, and they'll have somebody that delivers food. It might not be an employee of that restaurant, but that is seen as something completely different from delivering packages, which is why I said I'm surprised that, you know, FedEx and UPS haven't, you know, come out a little bit more in opposition to Amazon becoming a delivery service.
Well, they may squawk a little bit, but those guys have made oodles and oodles and oodles of money because Amazon came into existence. You know what I mean?
Amazon starts doing their own deliveries, UPS is going to wind up seeing a pretty sizable hit.
I think they may be pragmatic and say, okay, I get a $10 billion a year in revenue from regular Amazon business, and I'm going to keep getting. Am I really concerned about this very small niche daily delivery that they're doing in these couple towns?
Right, but this, from what I've heard, is sort of the beta test or the alpha test
precursor
before they wind up rolling it out nationwide.
Sure.
To where they are their own distribution from, you know, the various distribution centers that they've got now pretty much in every state. And a lot of that, why they have the distribution centers in every state, is because, you know, they aren't necessarily opposed to charging sales tax. They just don't want it to be mandated by the feds.
Right.
So they're working out deals with the different states of we'll set up a distribution.
I wonder if like shopping online is really like the best thing in the world. Like what happened to malls and like, you know, meaningful
or small local good shops.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like what happened to going out into your community and like going into a shop, you know, building like that relationship with those in your community is like, this is the reason government exists, is because we're all so divided.
Well, and that is a personal choice, and some people are very supportive of the shop local. Some people shop with their pocketbook, you know.
Right.
And there's a lot of things that technically I could buy here in Keene, New Hampshire, that I will go to Amazon every time because I know I'm going to save, you know, 10-15% off the price in the store before I use saveitpurse.com and save another 10%.
I just wound up buying a case of a coconut oil and peanut spread using Purse.
Could you buy that locally?
I could buy it locally at the co-op.
Right.
$6 a jar. Found it on Amazon. It was already cheaper per jar on Amazon, and then I saved 20%.
But you know what you didn't get? you didn't get that meaningful connection with a member of your community.
Well, that's...
No amount of money can buy that.
But what I did get was a lot more coconut oil and peanut spread to put in smoothies at a cheaper price, and then I didn't have to go out of my way to go to the food co-op.
And the point is that Daryl had money, and he wanted whatever god-awful sounding thing you just described.
It's actually
amazing.
We should
shop local and put more love back in our communities.
That's fine, but as a consumer, it should not be government's role to dictate where Daryl decides to get that horrible sounding stuff he was describing.
It's actually good. And the only reason I'm not saying peanut butter is because, and I looked this up, legally, it is not peanut butter. Peanut butter has to have at least 90% of the contents inside the jar and be peanuts.
I know you're very concerned with staying
peanut
legal on this.
Spread only requires 60% of what's in the jar to have come from peanuts.
Oh, my God.
And this is somewhere in that 60 to 90% peanut, and then there's coconut oil. So basically, it's a peanut butter with coconut oil, so it's healthier than,
okay,
you know, having like, you know, high fructose.
Whatever, you're not selling
whatever
me on whatever that is. I still can't get over it. But Heather, to your point, I mean, I get the buy local thing. I have mm-hmm. a business based on that idea, but I completely understand when people choose to take their money elsewhere because that's the free market. I think it's
materialism too. Like people are so fixated on having like material things. You know what I mean? And for me, like, even though I have expensive tastes that we established earlier, like, I'm not really a materialistic person. Like, I'd rather have meaningful relationships with members of my community than a bunch of crap I ordered off Amazon, but no real, like, you know what I mean? Nobody in my community benefited from any of the things that I have. So
well,
it's
that's,
kind of like,
that's not always necessarily true. Where's that UPS driver live? Where's that post office guy? Where are the people that work in the distribution? You may be surprised that some of those people are impacted or they own stocks in the company for the things you bought.
I'm Amazon celibate right now. I've never bought from Amazon.
The Amazon
never.
Prime. The Prime Now offering free 2-hour delivery for certain customers. We're out of time for tonight. We'll be back tomorrow online. In the meantime, at freetalklive.com.
We'd like to invite you to visit freekeen.com. Freekeen.com features audio, video, and blogs chronicling the transition to a voluntary society. Freekeen.com also has comments and discussion forums so you can be heard. Freekeen.com.